Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Muhammad Citizen for the week of March 16th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the headline articles under the banner of Village Business Scene. The headline reads, Muhammad IGA to become Schnooks. Local employees offered posts with new company. Brooks and Tammy Marsh are turning a page in their lives as they sell the Muhammad IGA to St. Louis-based Schnooks Markets. The announcement was made Friday, March 6th. Schnooks has stated it will make employment offers to the store's employees. Our mission is to nourish people's lives, and we're excited to be able to bring that philosophy to the people of Muhammad while also adding the store's employees and their grocery experience to the Schnooks team. Schnooks Chairman and CEO Todd Schnooks said in a March 6th press release. Brooks and Tammy have operated this store with pride for 15 years, and we look forward to continuing to take care of the store's longtime customers and welcoming many new ones as well. Muhammad IGA, located at 202 Eastwood Drive, will remain open through 5 p.m. Sunday, March 29th, then close for 2 days and reopen on Wednesday, April 1st, as Schnooks with a 8 a.m. ribbon cutting ceremony. The media release from the large chain stated that human resources personnel were to speak to Muhammad's IGA 79 employees March 6th about employment offers. This is the fourth Schnooks in the Champaign-Urbana area. As our family moves to our next chapter, we are excited to offer our friends, customers, and teammates a company that shares our tradition of serving people, Brooks Marsh said in a press release. Schnooks offers excellence in nutritious foods and is a great fit in the growth of our dynamic village. Tammy Marsh added, Our business and community have been such blessings in our lives. I look forward to what Schnooks will bring to these customers that have been like family to us. The Marshes will remain the owners of the 38,000 square foot building, which will be leased to Schnooks. I think it's a good move for Muhammad, said Walter Pierce, director of the Muhammad Area Chamber of Commerce. I'd love to have it stay local, but those days are probably gone. If I could have chosen a chain to come in, I love the fact that it's a Schnooks. They have good quality food, Pierce added. I believe everybody I've spoken to speaks highly of their produce, so I think that's wonderful news. Founded in St. Louis in 1939, Schnooks Markets Incorporated is a third-generation family-owned grocery and pharmacy retailer. In all, Schnooks operates 112 stores in Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Next up from the front page, we've got this article that's under the banner of Building at Capacity. The headline reads, Library Needs More Space. Discussions of Expansion in Early Stages. It's time for a new chapter for the Muhammad Public Library, according to its director. And the Library District Board is at work on plans for a building expansion. The library itself is in just beautiful condition, said John Howard, Library Director. But space is really becoming an issue, both for programming and materials. The planning is preliminary, Howard noted. So far, board trustees have talked to a professional library consultant. Next steps include deciding potential sizes for the expansion and discussing the matter with an architect. We're very much in a just-put-our-ducks-in-a-row stage, Howard said. In previous years, before the current 13,000-square-foot facility was constructed in 2010, according to Howard, a consultant advised community leaders that a 24,000-square-foot library is needed for Muhammad based on the size of the community and expected growth. The library district's borders match those of Muhammad Township. Before the 2010 construction, library leaders decided that costs dictated that 24,000 square feet be trimmed down to 18,000 square feet. But voters rejected funding for that size new library. Later, voters did approve the current size of the library, and it has served the community now for 10 years, Howard said. Programs hosted by the library sometimes have the current building bursting at the seams, he explained. Over the last year, we've had multiple programs with more than 100 people in attendance, Howard said. The ice cream social that we had this summer with live music. We had people sitting down the hallway. We had people stretched out throughout the children's department because there was just nowhere else near enough room in the programming space. The library's meeting space, the Edgar Room, is the only area of its kind in the building to host larger gatherings. It also hosts meetings and is typically scheduled for two or three times a day, Howard said. The place is just really heavily used, he added. On the literary side of the library and its mission, space also has run out, he said. There's just not enough room for the books for the community of this size, Howard said. I know a lot of people think books are old technology that aren't important anymore, but the numbers don't support that. In fact, in February, we saw an increase of 25% in checkouts over the previous February. We're still growing in that area, he added. He also said, we really are overcrowded in this building. We love the building. We're grateful to the community for the building, but it really is not up to the needs of Muhammad as the village grows. The focus of planning an addition at this point is a larger children's library section, according to Howard. The biggest thing would be a newer, bigger children's library with some program space, he said. We also have identified that we don't really have a separate space for teens at all. New plans should merge with previously executed plans for the library, the director noted. The existing building was built in a way that it could be easily expanded, first to the west, but also to the east, Howard said. This building is beautiful. We just need to add on to it. Library leaders are putting together a building program, which is a written description of what the library needs to serve the community, Howard said. Next, they will turn that over to an architect to craft building plans and give cost estimates on various options. Voters would have to approve a referendum, including funding, in order for an expansion to happen. The library board is made up of Chris Moore, president, Brian Paragi, vice president, Jeannie Campion, treasurer, Rebecca Rohde, secretary, and trustees Carrie Hyman and Kristen Streeter. We're doing a ton, Howard said, of the library staff's endeavors. We just need more space to do it in. Turning now to page A2, we have this article headlined, well, it's under the banner of Museum of the Grand Prairie, and the headline reads, Exhibit Focusing on Women's Rights Opens. The Museum of the Grand Prairie kicked off its exhibit, How Long Must Women Wait? Women's Suffrage and Women's Rights in Champaign County, with a preview from museum staff and first-person interpretations from the Living History Project on Saturday afternoon, March 7th. The exhibit commemorated the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment's ratification and explores the women's suffrage movement locally and nationally as only one landmark in a long-continuing struggle for women and other marginalized people to claim an equal role in society. After a short welcoming reception and exhibit preview from museum staff, three Eastern Illinois University students performed short first-person interpretations of women in history as part of the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies Living History Project. Bringing history to life is so important because you can't understand yourself and how you fit into the world unless you understand where you come from, said Kate Gosnell. So if I can be a part of that and help inspire future generations to be more active in finding their voice in society, then I've done my part. Gosnell of Mattoon portrayed Angelina Grimke, February 20th, 1805 to October 26, 1879, an American abolitionist, political activist, women's rights advocate, and supporter of the women's suffrage movement. Cammy Coffey of Charleston portrayed Jeanette Pickering Rankin, June 11, 1880 to May 18, 1973, an American politician and women's rights advocate, and the first woman to hold federal office in the United States. Rankin was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives as a Republican from Montana in 1916 and again in 1940. We hear the stories of the same few women, famous women, and especially a lot of famous men, said Coffey, but there are children in the audience and adults, grown-ups, and all ages who need to hear these lesser-known women who did a lot to impact history and make the world and our United States what it is today for women. The first-person interpretation spoke about Rankin's tough decisions as a pacifist in Congress. She was the only person to vote against going into World War II, Coffey said. So throughout her life, she stuck by what she believed in and really stood up for her principles. Miranda Smith, who portrayed Grace O'Malley Grenaya, circa 1530 to circa 1603, agreed that there are a lot of people in history who most people just do not get to hear about. Even as a history major, I've done this program for 3 years now, and two of the three were women who I had never heard about sitting in a history classroom in my entire life, Smith said. So I'm doing this program. I get to research and learn about these women, and I also get to take that knowledge into the classroom and expose all these children to this knowledge I wouldn't have had growing up, but now they have that knowledge and they can do something with it. Grace O'Malley Granui was queen of Umiah, chieftain of the Umiah clan, a rebel, pirate, seafarer, and fearless leader who challenged the turbulent politics of 16th century England and Ireland. According to Cece Elder, professor and chair of the Department of History at the Eastern Illinois University and chair of Living History Project for Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, the program usually performs first-person interpretations for Charleston Elementary and middle school classrooms and other events. We do this during History Month in March, Elder said. We think this is a great opportunity to make history alive for kids in our elementary school and in our community. Patrick Kane, public program/visitor services coordinator at the museum, agreed that the live performances were an added bonus to the opening of the Muhammad exhibit. We try to do the best we can with bringing exhibits to life, Kane said, and I came across this actually on Facebook once. The Living History Project, as part of Eastern Illinois University, I reached out to the department chair and asked if they would be interested in coming to help us with the grand opening, and they graciously accepted. The Museum of the Grand Prairie, located at 950 North Lombard Street in Mahomet, in Lake of the Woods Forest Preserve, is open from 1 to 5 p.m. daily during March. Also on A2, we have the 10 Question Friday segment. Each week we interview a familiar face in town. This week, Chad Hoffman chats with the Muhammad Citizens' Penny Weaver. Chad Hoffman is the executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County. Habitat for Humanity brings people together to build homes, community, and hope. Through the support of the community and donors, the nonprofit works to provide a hand up to potential first-time homeowners by providing counseling, support, a low-interest mortgage, and housing built by volunteers. Prior to serving at Habitat for Humanity, Chad was the executive director at the Muhammad Area Youth Club. Chad and his wife, Catherine, have been married for 22 years. They have two children, Veronica and Travis. Now the questions. Question number one, if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with the extra time? I would spend more time with family. I enjoy playing family games when we all have time, but between soccer, basketball, band, work, and other commitments, there never seems to be enough time. Question two, what hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue? As a family, we loved to travel and spend time at the national parks. If time and money were not an issue, I think that I would spend time rotating between the variety of parks and monuments throughout the United States. This is already my retirement dream, so the promise of unlimited resources would make this possible to accomplish it earlier in life. Question 3. What could you give a 45-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation? Before the kids started getting heavily involved in activities, I was very competitive with fantasy baseball. Even though that's been years ago, I could still give a great presentation on a variety of strategies and tips to win a league. Number 4. When you are old, what do you think children will ask you to tell a story about? I really don't know. My kids are both teens now, so they don't think Dad knows much or tells interesting stories. Question 5. What's the favorite piece of clothing you own or did own, and why? I'm not into clothing very much. I guess just comfortable jeans and a polo shirt if I had to pick something. Question 6. What are the small things that would make your day better, and why is that? I love an Illinois win in basketball. That always seems to make my day or week brighter when they play well. Champaign is a happier place with each Illinois win. Question 7. What is the luckiest thing that has happened to you, and when did it occur? I met my wife in a college religion class at the University of Dayton in Ohio in 1992. We've been married for 22 years now. Question 8. What is one of your favorite smells? I love the smell of wood burning and meat grilling. Question 9. What fictional place would you most like to go? If I could take my family, I would say Hogwarts. All of my family have read the books and watched the movies. It would be fun to see some of the fictional places close up. Question 10. If you could give advice based on your knowledge today to yourself as a 20-year-old, what would it be? I would tell my younger self to ask for help and listen more closely to leaders that have already experienced success to avoid potential pitfalls. Most opportunities and challenges have been tackled in some form already, and the wheel does not need reinvented each time to address those issues. It is great to lean on others who are willing to help that have experience in dealing with similar scenarios. And since we couldn't stop at 10, one bonus question. What gets you fired up? I get fired up when people are able to help others, but they decide to help themselves instead. I feel very strongly in giving back to the community and leaving it in a better place in comparison to where it started. And my input? Well done, Chad Hoffman. Turning now to page A3, we have this article headlined, School Board Splits on Contract Vote. Discussion of administrator contracts ended with a tally that had one Mohammed Seymour Board of Education member voting present and another voting no. The 2020-21 contracts, therefore, were approved, but only after several minutes of talks during the board's regular meeting on Monday, March 9th. For the agenda item, non-certified administrative IMRF and administrator contracts, recommended for approval by Superintendent Lindsay Hall, School Board Member Megan Hennessy voted no, while Member Colleen Schultz cast a present vote, and the yes votes that meant a green light for the contracts were from Max McComb, Lori Larson, Myrtle Giles, Jeremy Hendricks, and Ken Keefe. Overall, the administrative contracts allow for a 3.3% increase versus last year. But Hennessy opened discussions on the agenda item, stating she would like the school board to further discuss the contracts due to significant changes in language for each. She emphasized that she supports administrative and all staff in the school district, and her objection to approving the contracts Monday was no negative reflection on them. I want to make it very clear that this has nothing to do with a lack of trust or belief in the administrators or the people that have contracts that come before us, Hennessy said. I need to make that crystal clear. I feel like I've been painted into a bit of a corner. I tried to do this in a way that it wouldn't appear that this is a lack of trust. It isn't. We've had some significant contract language change, she noted. We were presented with that by email on Thursday. I would just like an opportunity as the board to discuss that language and perhaps run it by our attorney. Giles asked, and Hall confirmed that the district's attorney wrote the contract language in question. The changes were discussed previously by the school board and involved the process by which administrators and staff affected by the contracts are evaluated. I'm simply asking for the board to be able to discuss the language, Hennessy said. Henricks said Board of Education members talked about the changes at a previous meeting. We did have a discussion, and we did give some direction for our attorney, he said. We would like our superintendent to do the evaluation. Hennessy said, I'm just feeling, telling you how I feel. I just wanted to express my frustration with this process. Also among topics at Monday's meeting, the Compass program was highlighted via staff comments and a video presentation. Outgoing chief school business official Trent Nuxall was recognized after 9 years with the district, and incoming CSBO Heather Smith was approved for the post. And technology improvements such as replacement of the district's firewall, replacement of wireless equipment, and purchase of several new Chromebooks were okayed. And now turning to page A3, under the obituaries, we have these death notices of local and area interest. Catherine Joyce Block passed away Monday afternoon, March 2, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A graveside committal service was at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 14, 2020, at Emmanuel Lutheran Cemetery, 390 County Road 2400 East in Broadlands, Illinois, 61816. Pastor John Sharp officiated. Stephen D. Crow, 68, of Gibson City, died at 12:40 p.m. Monday, March 2, 2020, at Farmer City Rehab and Health Care. Visitation was Friday, March 6, from 10 to 11 a.m. at Blair Owens Funeral Home, 102 East Dunbar Street in Mahomet, with the funeral immediately following at 11 a.m. Burial was at Grandview Memorial Gardens in Champaign. Noah Lukacs earned his angel wings on Saturday, March 7, 2020, after a hard-fought battle with an upper respiratory infection. He was 29 years old. Noah's celebration of life took place on Saturday, March 14, 2020, at Our Lady of the Lake Catholic Church, 501 West State Street in Mahomet, Illinois, 61853. A visitation was from 9 to 11 a.m., with funeral mass beginning at 11, followed by a luncheon to honor Noah's incredible life. In accordance with family wishes, Noah will be cremated and his ashes will be buried at a later date. Condolences may be offered at www.owensfuneralhomes.com. Catherine S. Raschke, 65, of Urbana, passed away on Thursday, December 26, 2019, in her residence. I think that should probably be 2020. A memorial reception was from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, March 14, 2020, in the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Villa Grove, with a graveside service following in the Villa Grove Cemetery. Dale Norman Worth, 57, formerly of Mahomet and Champaign, died on Monday, February 10, 2020, in South Carolina. Private services will be held at a later date. Memorials in Dale's name may be made to Quest Church in Urbana. And now, returning to the news and views and sports, we have page A6. The headline is under the banner of sports. And the headline reads, Regional Crown Slips Away, But Bulldogs Boost Status. All week long, Ryan Boss reminded his Bulldogs how dangerous Urbana could be. A track meet wasn't going to end pretty. Urbana was just far too dangerous when they got flying up and down the floor in transition. Late in the first quarter, MS had done almost everything right. Grant Coleman had started hot. The defense was forcing Urbana to shoot long-range bombs. They were clanging off the rim. It was 14-5 late in the first quarter. The Bulldogs were playing the type of basketball that they had grown accustomed to during their 10-game winning streak. Definitely felt really confident, Boss said. Loved where our kids' heads were. It certainly helps to see the ball go through the basket, and when we're able to score, that allowed us to set our defense. Urbana started cold while the Bulldogs started hot, and then things switched in a hurry, and a terrific bounce-back season slowly slipped away. Urbana spread the Bulldogs out in the fourth quarter and outscored MS 19-9. An outstanding MS season ended in the Class 3A Regional Championship game with a 64-48 loss to the Tigers. MS finished shooting just 33% from the floor. They missed 16 of their 23-pointers. 3 days later, Boss sat in his classroom and helplessly watched the game over again. Time and time again, MS would claw back within 3 points only to see Urbana pull away. It was one rough night, Boss lamented. We had our opportunities. We couldn't get the ball to go through the basket enough times. Bosch pondered what could have been. He'd much rather have been preparing for the Class 3A sectional semifinal game against Springfield Lamphere, but he couldn't. The Bulldogs did a lot of things right in 2019 and 20. They won 21 games. Their 10-game winning streak was some of the best basketball that MS has played in a while. They showcased that they were the second-best team in the Apollo Conference behind state-ranked Lincoln. They brought Muhammad Seymour basketball back. The Bulldogs weren't relevant last year. They are now. But does a regional championship loss make this season feel like a missed opportunity? Oh, that's a really good question, Bosch pondered. I certainly feel bad for these kids. I wouldn't call it a missed opportunity. I felt like they worked really hard to get to this place to play for a regional. I think they might look back and think of it as a missed opportunity, but I think it'd be poor on their part to view it that way. They had a great season. They were certainly capable of winning a regional and making a deep run, and it didn't work out. But honestly, I see so many positives. The kids believe in what we were coaching them to do, playing together as a team, and they got to reap the rewards of that stuff and be successful on the floor. Boss was genuinely heartbroken for his guys, seniors like Cole Lanner, Nick Ligridonis, Grant Coleman, Kobe Ison, and Mason Butler had given everything to the program. They mean the world to me, Boss said. We threw them into the fire as a group. We hoped that they would click eventually. They took a lot of shots on the chin last year and then played through that. They grew. They established an identity for us, and they believed in what we were doing. Basketball is supposed to be fun. For a large majority of the year, it was. Last Friday, wasn't. It was painful and devastating, but it by no means was the end of the line for the MS program. There are no plans to slip back into mediocrity next season. Braden Finch, Luke Kohler, and Eli Warren solidified themselves as three of the top six players on the roster this season. They're all back next year. They know what it looks like to win. It gives you confidence that there will be some continuity there, Bosch said. There's some real potential with the group coming back. Soon it will be basketball season again. For now, Bosch and the Bulldogs will have to ponder on what could have been. This has been the Muhammad Citizen for the week of March 16th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. I wish all of my listeners good health. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.